This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Now the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has updated the safety labeling on all mRNA COVID-19 vaccines to warn those who take them to beware. Beware of what? Irreversible heart damage. That's right. The FDA now has announced it has required and approved updates to the prescribing information for mRNA shots from Pfizer and Moderna. The warnings are to include new safety information about the risks of myocarditis and pericarditis following administration of mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. And what else should we learn about updates concerning vaccines, or at least the COVID vaccines? Well, a study concludes the ingredient in Pfizer Moderna COVID shots supercharges allergic responses. An ingredient used in the Pfizer and Moderna COVID injections has potential to supercharge allergic responses in the human body, including life-threatening anaphylaxis, according to the new peer-reviewed study. It was published in the Journal of Pharmaceutics, stating that 40% of the global population may now be sensitized to this allergic reaction. Then, a scientist for Johnson & Johnson, one of the corporations that assembled a COVID shot during the China virus pandemic, has confirmed in an undercover video that proper testing wasn't done. The effectiveness was unknown, and somebody eventually will get sued over the catastrophe that developed for Americans. In fact, somebody already won a $2.5 million lawsuit in that regard. The comments were reported by O'Keefe Media Group, which released undercover video and a subsequent video in which the scientists identified Joshua Rice, a lead regulatory scientist for Johnson & Johnson, tried to avoid questions about his comments. The report noted that the scientists confessed that the J&J COVID shots were not safe and effective, and there was lack of basic research done. He said, "People wanted it, and we gave it to them." At one point, he explained there was almost just a move to throw the vaccine to the wind and see what happens. Believe it or not, that video showed the Pfizer director of research and development admitted the pharma giant was exploring mutating COVID-19 via directed evolution so the company could continue to profit off the vaccines. Now, because of all of that, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have recommended COVID-19 vaccines should be administered only through a shared decision of healthcare provider and the individual, moving away from the broader backing for the shot. The new recommendation maintains access for the shot through health insurance. In other words, money is still the issue. So today on Viewpoint, I welcome you to the program. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's Conversation with Ever-Increasing Conviction, Talk That Transforms. And our guest today joining us says prior to 2020, we had never questioned the sacred cow of vaccines. It was only in 2020 when we observed the stupendous chicanery of the COVID-19 vaccine rollout that we began to wonder about the entire vaccine enterprise. Since then, he said, we have methodically studied the literature on vaccination going back to its 18th century roots in a smallpox inoculation procedure called variolation. This book presents a brief history and critical evaluation of this public health procedure as it has evolved over the last 300 years. And our guest today wants you to know that neither he nor Dr. McCullough, who is his co-author of this book, Vaccines, Mythology, Ideology, and Reality, they're not anti-vaxxers, but they are requiring us to seriously consider what it's all about. So, joining us today on Viewpoint, John Leake, co-author of the book Vaccines, Mythology, Ideology, and Reality. Joining us, John, it's good to have you on the program.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'll tell you, we're looking at something here that has been profoundly challenging. We've talked about this for a number of years now, over and over again. We used to do an almost weekly or biweekly update on all of these things. Now they're few and far between, but when they come, they're pretty momentous. And that's what we just shared, some of those momentous developments over the past several months. So why would you and Dr. McCullough now bring a book like this to the fore when the COVID thing seems to be, well, it's a bit passe in terms of at least its front row center media presentation?
Well, I think, like we state in our presentation of the book, it's this very strange and eerie recognition that we had, you know, with the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines, that we have this thing in public affairs, this proposition that vaccines, this immunological product, is the great means of controlling and eliminating infectious disease mortality, and that it's kind of the key discovery of modern medicine. And we were just astonished to discover, as we went back and reviewed the entire enterprise going back 300 years, that a lot of this proposition that we accept as a sort of article of faith just isn't true. And you're right that the COVID-19 vaccine seems to be now kind of, you know, fading into the mists of time, but it shouldn't, because what the COVID-19 vaccine rollout revealed is we can't trust our public health authorities in the matter of injecting us, whether that be purportedly novel infectious disease pathogens emerging or coming out of a lab, as was the case with this one, or with the children, you know, the childhood vaccine schedule. I mean, it remains a current matter of vital interest as long as people are having children and taking them to get injected. And so our conclusion is all of these presuppositions and all of these technologies that have now enjoyed liability protection since 1986, it all needs to be reexamined.
All right, so your book actually encourages that kind of reexamination and gives the foundation for it. It's a rather fascinating book because you present the history of vaccines going back to 1721 to 1800 concerning smallpox. That was a big deal, and the smallpox vaccine came out. It was called variolae. Pronounce that word. That's a tongue twister.
Variolation.
Variolation. Let's repeat it. Variolation comes from a Latin word for smallpox. Amazing. Yeah, we'll be right back after this. Friends, you're going to want to get a copy of this book, Vaccines, Mythology, Ideology, and Reality. You really are. $31 is going to put this hardback book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. We'll be right back with John Lee.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
What is a vaccine anyway? Is it a sacred cow? Prior to 2020, we had never questioned the sacred cow of vaccines. But it was only in 2020, when we observed the stupendous chicanery of the COVID-19 vaccine rollout, that we began to wonder about the entire vaccine enterprise. Those are words from the preface of the new book by John Leek and Peter McCullough. Peter McCullough, a revered cardiologist, doctor, who has been at the forefront of the whole COVID issue and has suffered greatly at the hands of the American Medical Association and others for taking the stance that he has. John, how do you end up partnering with Dr. McCullough on this matter?
Well, when the first reports emerged, I should say not the first, but when it became really a matter of almost constant media broadcasting in March of 2020, that there was this novel infectious, you know, viral illness coming out of China, and that it was headed for our shores, and you know, that President Trump was going to close down air traffic from China and so on and so forth. You know, I started paying very close attention to this, I think like a lot of Americans, but I am, by my professional background, a true crime author, and I had developed a fair amount of ability and interest in reading forensic medical literature.
Mm-hmm.
And forensic medicine is not just the analysis of signs of foul play. It's the analysis of the general question, how do we die? When somebody dies, the question, you perform an autopsy and you try to ascertain, well, how did this person die? And so I was paying very close attention to, you know, the forensic medical literature emerging on this. And I think it was March of 2021, the Italians did the first autopsy study, and they said, well, you know, we have confirmed cases in which the decedents died of this new syndrome. It's not that they died with it. It's that they died of it. There was a very clear vignette in the hospital, a pneumonia that resulted in a you know, catastrophic organ failure, and they died. And the thing that jumped out at me was the average age of decedents. Now, it was a relatively small study, but the average age of the decedents was 81 years old.
Okay.
And I remember thinking, okay, so, you know, this is affecting the elderly, and in this case, people have actually exceeded life expectancy. You know, what is this doing to the young and healthy?
Uh-huh.
And that's where, you know, the answers immediately ran out. There just wasn't any evidence that of strong mortality amongst the young and healthy. And that's really where you worry about a viral respiratory disease. And the big kind of Super Bowl of viral respiratory diseases was the influenza pandemic, so-called Spanish influenza of 1918.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to know that, you know, the whole biosecurity pandemic response industry, and it's a huge one, all of the preparations of the last decades have been for the next Spanish flu. And it's almost like the whole pandemic response industry was waiting for the next Spanish flu. This is going to be our Super Bowl, or this is going to be, you know, like military officers, this is going to be our World War II. But it just wasn't unfolding in the same way as the Spanish influenza, which had a very high rate of mortality, interestingly enough, among people in their 20s. It was actually at a much higher case fatality rate of people in their 20s than it did anyone over the age of 60. So I just thought, okay, a lot of what we were being told sort of doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up.
Right.
And the second thing was, you know, I didn't doubt that people were getting into trouble with this, that they were falling pretty ill. Amongst younger people, there was a strong correlation with people being overweight and having high blood sugar, so an underlying metabolic disorder. These people tended, amongst the young or the middle age, to get into trouble with this. And so you would, on the face of it, want to look for treatment modalities to help these people. You know, how, if there's a high-risk group, how do we prevent them from falling desperately ill and being checked into hospital and possibly dying in hospital? And the answer was, from the official medical establishment, there is no treatment. None.
Oh, wow.
There's
nothing. Yeah, but we were told to follow the science. Isn't that what Dr. Fauci continued to say? Follow the science, follow the science.
Right.
And then he virtually said, I am the science.
Well, correct. So it's this. On the one hand, this is a novel infectious, emergent disease. At the same time, Fauci and these guys already knew, before there was any chance to do any kind of real field observation or case series, never mind a randomized trial, that they already knew there is no treatment. All we can do is lock down, wear masks, and wait at home for the vaccine, which, and the assurance was, it's already underway. It's already in development. For example, Moderna and the NIH had a new messenger RNA vaccine. They had it up and running and in human trials about a week after the Chinese purportedly sequenced the new virus, SARS-CoV-2. And you think, wow, these guys, it's like they're really ready to rock with the vaccine. And they're telling us that the vaccine is the only solution.
Yeah.
And I just found that a very mysterious kind of counterintuitive proposition.
Well, now it's even being reported, it's even being said by those behind the scenes in those institutions, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and so on, that indeed they did not have the answer. They had prepared something, well, the people want it. The people want something.
Yeah, right.
The people want something. So Burger King says you got to give the people what they want. Have it your way. The same thing that's going on in many of our churches. Pastors responding to people, tell me what I want to hear. Tell me what I want to hear. Give me what I want. And so it seems to me that was a very powerful behind-the-scenes motivation, not to mention the money attached to it.
Yes, there had long been a perception that the big arena in which to launch a new genetic platformed vaccine, and messenger RNA was the technology around which there was a great deal of excitement. The opportunity, at hand is an emergent viral illness. Now, what is particularly astonishing about this is, and I'll see if I can take a technical matter and simplify it, it was already understood in immunology circles, and I was rather astonished to see that Anthony Fauci himself and two of his colleagues at the NIH have actually published a paper on this in which they concede it's very difficult to control, if not impossible, to control an upper respiratory viral illness that rapidly replicates in the nose. And this is coronaviruses and influenza viruses. It was understood that these replicate in the nasal mucosa, which has little contact with blood antibodies. The adaptive immune system of blood antibodies is really not brought to bear on these rapidly replicating upper respiratory infections until the infection gets down deep into the lungs, into the gas exchange region of the lungs. It's only then, and that could be up to 2 weeks later, that blood antibodies have any effect on that.
And yet that's exactly where the COVID mRNA protocol was directed. And Dr. Malone, who was one of the, perhaps the founder of the mRNA protocol concept, joined us here on this program, and he had warned publicly In fact, he had pleaded with doctors and the medical profession across the world, please do not proceed with mRNA. It is way too dangerous. It has repercussions that you have no idea where it's going to go. And he was unheeded. In fact, he was given the left foot of fellowship from the medical profession.
Well, that's true. I would say that's a slightly different, I mean, it's a major matter, but it's a different matter than the one I was just explicating. The point is that senior immunologists, including Anthony Fauci, understood that a shot in the deltoid muscle designed to induce the production of blood antibodies, it's not going to control this. Theoretically, after the person has been sick for 2 weeks, the blood antibodies could be brought to bear on it, and it might blunt the infection from proceeding, for advancing much further. But by then, the person's already sick. It's an advanced state of the illness, and they've already been transmitting it to other people.
Also, in addition to that, John, we were told, our president, our then president, told us over and over again from the bully pulpit that you've got to get the shot, and it will keep you from getting the virus. And
right.
It will also keep you from spreading the virus. Yet Dr. Birx,
right,
who joined Dr. Fauci in promoting all of this on national television, promoting her book, came out and said, I never believed that this mRNA shot was going to keep people from getting the virus or that it was going to keep people from spreading the virus.
Yeah, so what I was going to point out, and I think this is the salient point, nobody with serious experience and understanding of immunology believed that this shot would prevent infection and transmission. It just wasn't true. And in the conception of the technology, it was understood it's not going to prevent infection and transmission. So then this raises the enormous question, well, why were you telling the public that it would? First of all, why were you telling the public that it would? And then secondly, given that it was understood it doesn't stop infection and transmission, what on earth is the rationale for mandates?
Well, that question was presented to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and because they realized they were caught. They actually were confronted with that reality, and for that reason, they had to literally change the definition of a vaccine in order to try to keep a straight face in talking about it.
Well, it's true, and so I see you're very well versed in this subject matter. I mean, what we realized was, like, pretty much everything we're being told is a fraud, and it's not that it's some really subtle deception. I mean, it's just gross chicanery. And so that, a lot of it's just downright laughable. I mean, it's, the Australians, in a macabre way, and the Australians granting Novak Djokovic a visa, he's proven that he's already had COVID-19. He's got an antibody test to prove it. They grant him the visa to fly across the Pacific to Sydney to perform in the Sydney Open, the Australian Open. And then after he arrives at the airport, they rescind his visa and put him in quarantine in a hotel. And you think, this is just a perfectly outrageous fraud, like everything about this.
And yet the entire medical association, the AMA, actually required doctors to promote this, and if they did not, they were to be given, well, should we say, excommunicated from the medical association. We'll be right back after this, friends. You've got to get a copy of this book, Vaccines, Mythology, Ideology, and Reality. $31 will put it in your hands. It's on our website.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
In vaccines, we trust. Until now. In vaccines, we trust until now. In fact, in the medical profession, we trusted until now. So what happened as a result of the COVID situation and the so-called mRNA vaccine, which it was not? It was not a vaccine, because the definition of vaccine is that it will prevent you from getting the disease and will prevent you from transmitting it. It did neither of those, and was well known behind the scenes not to do any of those things. Yet Joe Biden, over and over and over again on television, virtually ordered people to get the shot because it would keep you from getting the disease and keep you from transmitting it. Yet he got COVID five times. So all that having been said, what happened here, without getting too much into the technical weeds on this, what has really happened, John, is that the trust of the American people was severely not only tested, but actually in many respects eroded. Now who can we trust? Think about the people that that carry this. The medical association, the whole medical association carried it. Then pastors submitted to it. Hook, line, and sinker. They accuse people who did not get the shot as not being true followers of Jesus Christ. It seems that everywhere you went, all of our institutions and the leaders of our nation succumbed to the fraud.
It's true. It's a very sad moment. I call it a sad and rather shabby moment in American history. I mean, our institutional leaders just revealed themselves to be cowardly nincompoops. They really did. I mean, there are these moments in history where this sort of veil is cast away, and you suddenly see the lack of real moral and intellectual fiber. That apparently that deficiency was there. We just had no occasion to see it.
And well, it seems to me, John, that if we go back on this, what we find is there was a, shall we say, an ungodly, unholy reverence of science, as if science was a thing in and of itself, and you could always trust the science. I mean, isn't that what Fauci preached? He preached a doctrine of trust the science. Science is trustworthy. Well, what is science? No, he was not preaching science. He was preaching scientism. It's a whole ism. It's a belief system, isn't it?
It is. I mean, that's a central chapter of our book, the idea that you start with a sort of a method of inquiry, and then you through a semantic sleight of hand, you just, instead of saying, well, it's a method of inquiry and discussion, analysis, and debate, and then cast that is a kind of set and stone orthodoxy that you then deify. You say, I Pontifex Maximus Anthony Fauci, am in possession of science, period. Uh-huh. But again, this is just preposterous. I mean, anybody who studied the history and the philosophy of science knows that that was just ridiculous. And you know, I always really try very hard to understand people and what they're going through and what they're thinking. But, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of this is just childishness.
Yet the people, did they have a right? Did we, the people, have a right to depend upon our doctors, to depend upon the head of the National Institute of Health, Mr. Collins, who purported to be a follower of Jesus Christ? Did we have a right or to believe that they were telling us the truth? Or did we have a responsibility to go beyond that and investigate from the get-go whether or not any of the what they were saying was true?
Well, where the rubber hits the road on any purported threat to public health and public safety is the people, we are capable of just looking around and talking to our friends, our family, if we're a member of a church, talking to the church congregation to ascertain our, let's just take the cohort of the young and healthy, are young and healthy people dying of this? And the answer, you know, which became evident after about 3 or 4 weeks, is no, this does not pose a threat to the young and healthy. So those are our own eyes and our own ears. What the central state does is it says to the people, we are telling you there's a public emergency, and you, per U.S. statute, in this case it's the PREP Act of 2005, we have invoked a public health emergency, and the people must obey us, and they must accept our representations of the threat.
All right, so what it amounted to was a new religious gospel, so-called good news. You can be saved. It's a message of salvation. You can be saved, just believe us.
Correct.
But it wasn't true. So it was a false gospel.
It was a false gospel. I'm glad that you've recognized that a lot of what we're told has nothing to do with scientific inquiry. It is the erection of a false religious orthodoxy. Uh-huh. Not a revealed religious orthodoxy like what we have in the Bible, but
right.
just guys in Washington saying, this is the threat, and then we, bring you tidings of great joy, a vaccine is born.
Now you've really used a great phrase there. I bring you great tidings of great joy, because unto you is brought this day Dr. Fauci with the new Moderna or Pfizer vaccine that is going to save your soul. Just believe us. Just believe. Just believe. And so
correct.
The entire
correct.
Country and world decided to just believe. Now, I want to take this a little bit further, whether or not you feel comfortable with it, I don't know. But we talk about things like this on Viewpoint. And that is, what we're really talking about is the spirit of a new world order. We're talking about the spirit of a new globalism that requires humankind to believe the hope of a new global salvation, so to speak. Just get the mark of the beast, or just believe what you're being told, and everything's going to be wonderful. All your needs are going to be met. And it seems to me that what this was an early stage of preparing the people for just that kind of thinking.
Well, I think there's absolutely no doubt about it. And the guys who were so gung-ho about everybody getting this shot, it's known globalist monopolists like Bill Gates.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting that in the year 2009, between 1998 and 2000, Bill Gates was being characterized by the U.S. Department of Justice as the worst monopolist since John Rockefeller. And I mean, we have short memories. People perceived him to be a very ruthless man who was very singular and single-minded in his thinking. And, you know, he wanted the whole world to have a Windows operating system. And he was just ruthless in his elimination of anybody that created, an Internet application that didn't run on the Windows system. And Netscape was the thing that he was really in his crosshairs. And then he kind of reforms his image. And he says, well, you know, I'm a philanthropist, and I want everybody to get a vaccine. But the same religious zeal, you know, everybody has to have a Windows operating system. Now it's everybody has to, every man, woman, and child has to get my vaccine or the vaccines that I've invested in. And he said at Davos in 2019 to Betty Quick on Squawk Box, vaccines are the best investment I've ever had by 20X.
So, well, he went way beyond that, John. During the course of the COVID issue, he filed a patent with the U.S. Patent Office that carried the very spirit, not just of the vaccine, but of something that was far more troubling, and that is to merge with microtechnology, merge the medical and economic issues of the world all into one device that every man, woman, and child on the planet would have implanted or inscribed on them. And so that would enable the world to be saved. All humanity would be saved if you would just make sure that that you took this mark or took this implantation, whatever it was going to be. He already filed the patent application. So it seems that all of that has been forgotten, but that is the spirit of what Bill Gates was about. And he never, ever ceased that initial, shall we say, power-hungry motivation. Is just multiplied now manyfold.
It's true, and I do want to emphasize, I do want to reiterate, that humans are actually pretty sensitive to when there is a true, clear, and present danger, to use Oliver Wendell Holmes, the Supreme Court Justice's formulation, when is a federal declaration of a federal emergency justified. It's where you can see it. It's not just what the government's telling you. I mean, there's a hurricane. There's a foreign army that's walking down the street shooting people.
Well, we're going to have to get back to that question after this break. Again, we're talking with John Leek, co-author of the book Vaccines, Mythology, Ideology, and Reality. It's on our website, saveus.org.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click sell church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Trust is the big issue, my friends. I remember back about 15, 20 years ago, I was in an airport and came across the always present newspaper that is made available there in our airports. And right on the front was the word trust. It was about 3 or 4 inch high letters in green, right on the front of the newspaper, trust. And it was talking about how then trust was becoming a very serious problem for Americans in our institutions. That was all shattered to the max during the COVID era. Now the question is, who can we trust? What can we trust? What should we trust? And is there anything beyond just in God we trust that we should trust or put any kind of confidence in? Now, I want to shift just a little bit here, John, if we can, away from COVID, away from the mRNA situation, and let's now talk about immunization, because those are vaccines, the so-called immunization program. Kids all the way back into the 50s were required to receive, what was it, 5 or 6 or 7 shots all in one to present against measles and mumps and so on. Then the medical association thought, well, this is so cool, we're going to add a whole lot more to it. We're going to prevent almost everything. So then somewhere around 20, 25 different things were included in one shot. Well, then we're concerned about autism and a massive increase of autism over the past 40, 50 years. Was it due to the shot? Was it due to the vaccines, the immunizations that were given? Or now we're told maybe it's due to Tylenol, or maybe it's due to both. How are we supposed to work through this kind of thing now, John, given the fact that the trust has been shattered? What do we do? What say you? What's your insight on this?
Well, I think that we're going to have to go back to independent scholarship insofar as the United States government agencies have revealed themselves to be pretty captured by pharmaceutical interests, including vaccine manufacturers. It places we, the people, in a very, very difficult position because we can't trust these agencies and the commercial interest that has captured them.
It's like the CDC was not the Center for Disease Control, but the Center for Deception.
Well, it's true. I mean, you have to wonder. I mean, the CDC, my understanding is they have 12,000 full-time employees. I mean, what are these people doing? I mean, I am the vice president of the McCullough Foundation in Dallas. We do independent investigative scholarship on all of these medical public policy issues, including autism. And, you know, we have spoken with people at the CDC, and we've expressed to them our concerns that, you know, it's not enough just to simply document the explosive rise of autism prevalence, including severe autism. They need to start looking into what's causing it.
Well, that supposedly is what happened with Robert Kennedy and coming out with the warning concerning Tylenol during pregnancy.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like we've known about Tylenol. There has been a concern about, you know, that Tylenol might be a contributing factor for decades. You know, why is it only when President Kennedy is, you know, gets into office as Health and Human Services Secretary and is really apparently making some strides into getting some real scrutiny of the childhood vaccine schedule performed, you know, suddenly, it looks like it's Tylenol after all.
Well, maybe so, it's because he is willing to confront orthodoxy no matter what the arguments coming. I mean, he has been persecuted horribly for coming out and saying, we're going to take a serious look at these things. Well, now he's facing mega bucks out there. The whole medical association is coming against him, saying this is our livelihood. You know, it's analogous somewhat, John, to going back to the New Testament, where the Apostle Paul is going into, I believe it was Ephesus, and he goes in there and he's preaching the gospel, and all of a sudden the silversmiths get upset because they think that he is preaching a gospel that's going to keep the people from worshiping the goddess Diana, which is going to take away from them making silver goddesses of Diana. So they cause an uproar in the city and bring Paul in to destroy him because of the, not because of a true belief, but because of money.
Yes, you are definitely the worship of mammon is definitely a huge part of this. But what I want to say is it appears that autism, what's called autism spectrum disorder, it is multifactorial, but and naturally acetaminophen should be carefully examined. But to us, and to me as an old true crime guy, this sudden, looks like acetaminophen is the main event. I find that hard to believe. To me, that looks like what we call a red herring.
Yeah, I can understand that, too. So who do you trust? Because that point, it was believed that it was rooted in these multi-immunizations taking place all at once in our young people, and the effect on their systems was so profound that it was leading to a 300% increase in autism, or more than that, actually.
Yes, so the prevalence of autism is estimated to have gone from about 1 in 10,000 in 1970, the year I was born, and the current estimate is about 1 in 31. And so that tremendous spike in autism, if you plot it on a timeline, it matches almost lockstep with the increase of vaccines on the childhood schedule since 1986, when Congress passed this liability protection for vaccine manufacturers. Remember, they initially said, well, we've got about six vaccines on the schedule and we need liability protection if we're going to keep making them. Liability protection was granted. And then they said, thanks for the liability protection, let's go ahead and put a whole new battery of shots on the schedule. And so, now a child between infancy and 18, I think, gets 72 shots.
Wow.
And, a lot of these are administered, not all of them all at once, but in big batches all at once. And what we're concerned about and what we're looking very specifically, very precisely at the McCullough Foundation, we've just done a large review of this, is it's specific cases in which the child has a normal birth, full gestation, hits the normal developmental milestones between 12 and 18 months. Parents then go in, take him, he gets a big battery of shots all at once. Shortly thereafter, develops a fever or seizures or what are called febrile seizures, seizures with a fever. Spiking fever, seizures, and then in the immediate wake of these initial symptoms receding, the child himself regresses, becomes nonverbal, noncommunicative, stops making eye contact, withdraws into his own little world, and cries a lot, doesn't sleep very well anymore. And the parents, in these particular vignettes, they tell a narrative in which there is a very tight temporal association. He was fine. We took him to get the shots. Within 24 hours, he developed this initial syndrome with the high fever. And then he immediately thereafter regressed. So that's what we're looking at. And what it looks like is some children have a sensitivity to these shots. It causes brain inflammation, encephalitis. That does brain damage. And what we call autism are the sequelae of brain damage, of encephalitis. Yep. It's a post-encephalitis syndrome. When we're trying to figure out what causes something, we don't talk about a spectrum. That would be like saying, I want to know the cause of all cancers. Well, there isn't one cause of all cancer. You say, I want to know what's causing this particular carcinoma of the lung. Just this one cell. And we see that this is often presented in people who've been smoking cigarettes for many years.
Yeah.
So let's look and see if there's an association between cigarette smoking and this one kind of lung carcinoma. So that's what we're doing with autism.
All right. What we call in the law, I practiced law as a trial lawyer for 20 years, it's what we call follow the evidence.
Correct.
The evidence. And as Joe Rogan said on the back of your book, Dr. Peter McCullough was right all along. So was Dr. Malone in his warning. And both of these guys were revered and then rejected by the medical association and all the powers that be, and mocked and maligned until all of a sudden we discover they were the ones telling the truth and the others were not. And the motivation behind it, in many respects, was money, power, perks, and position. That always seems to be at the root of every false gospel. This is a false gospel, friends. And I'm looking with fascination at the front of your book. We can't go into a lot of detail here, but I just noticed that there's a coin right on the front of the book, City of the Vatican, with a picture of a young man on a euro coin being vaccinated in the name of the Vatican.
Wow. The Holy Father.
There it is, right there, friends. This is an amazing situation. You really should get a copy of this book if you have any interest in these things whatsoever. A $32 book, yours for $31, on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. You're writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. This is going to take you through a lot of the history of vaccines and tracking it through to see where the battles have been, why they have been there. And the chapter called Reckless New World, I think, is characteristic of what we're talking about. Some people would call it Brave New World. It's a reckless new world because we are rejecting the issues of real truth and real trust and ready to embrace false gospels, whether they be medical gospels, whether they be economic gospels or so on, willing to receive falsity readily. Because we just want to hear what we want to hear. Get a copy of the book, friends. Don't be deceived. It's time that we take seriously some of these issues and not play pretend anymore. Thanks for joining us. John, it's good to have you on the program so much. Thank you so much. And friends, become a partner. Become a partner here on Viewpoint. The other guy's not doing it. Help us to keep the program going. And I believe God will bless you as a result. God bless and be a blessing.
Been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.